Okay, welcome to Highway Diaries. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Ole Demigard, all the way from Spain. How do you do, my friend?
I'm good, good, good. How are you?
Good. This is episode 245 of the Highway Diary podcast, the website, lightonconspiracies.com. My guest is a decoder of what the mainstream news calls crisis events, real-life crisis. Events are actually staged by the government or by different secret societies for a certain purpose. Your forensic trail has led to a company called Crisis-Solutions.com, Crisis Solutions Limited, LTD, which operates out of 16 High Holborn, London. You visited this site, huh?
I've had people there, and it's like an empty shop front. But I just want to say, if I can reverse the tape a little bit here, is that I've been devoting some 40 years of my life into looking into what is called false flag terror, false flag operations, and also top political assassinations. And so I'm very careful not to jump to any conclusions before I really have been digging deep into each and every single case. So to say that I say that all of these are the crisis actors, absolutely not. But many, many of them are for sure. And so we can go into many details, but I prefer if there are specific cases or if we take and speak generally about these type of operations, then I can go into great detail of how they're carried out and what the difference in ingredients are. So,
all right. Well, one thing that I kind of have been following your work for 2 years now, and one thing that kind of strikes me is, like, Hitler's goal. Hitler, you know, what did he want to do? His goal was to join Europe under Germany, and that was a military solution to combine all of Europe. But he was unsuccessful because he used a gun. Now, the bankers were more successful. They introduced a euro, a currency, to join Europe together, and that was more successful because it was more like a soft sell, like, hey, we'll all, you won't have to change your currency every time you get off the train, we'll all, you know, use the same currency. But in this way, they centralize their power. So when you have decentralized power, you have more freedom, and when you have centralized power, you have these unelected EU people who are, you know, just these oligarchs of Europe all of a sudden because of the currency. Now you've basically done Hitler's goal of joining Europe, but you used a banking solution, which might be worse in some ways.
You're correct. And I think the complete picture to understand what's actually going on in the world, you have to get a helicopter view, sort of like raise your view, because what we're looking at, if I'm correct, after all of these years, is what is called the New World Order, where a small group of people or individuals, they're in the thousands, we're in the billions, have decided to see how they can control the whole world, not just Europe or the US, but the whole world. That is what they're looking for, global control. And they have worked for many, many, many years, even generations, on concentrating the power to fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer. And so, just like you say, when the power is decentralized, we have freedoms. And the more centralized it becomes, we're looking more and more at a dictatorship. In the end, I mean, a dictator, you can't get more centralized than that when it's one person who decides your existence or not. But we're looking, the world is facing now a very small group that is just like the Wizard of Oz. It's trying to scare us into obedience through many different tactics. It's different for different nations, but the group that we're looking at is an international group. It's above borderlines. So it's not the U.S. If you look at the U.S. or France or Germany as separate things, you are making a mistake, because the agenda is for the globe to take over, if it's flat or round, whatever it is, but to get world control, total control. And they've got different ways of doing that. So I believe, is what we're seeing today.
There's also sort of an occult religion of these top people at of the cabal. They have a whole religion. And one of the people, you talk about the oligarchs, one of the top people that we can see doing public appearances, this lady called Christine Lagardez, I don't know how to say her name, but she's a French lady who's the top of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. And when she does public appearances, she talks in these weird codes, and I'd want to play this clip here. Hang on for it to... So she's talking to the National Press Club.
Thank you so much. Merci beaucoup. As you can tell, I do as I'm told, and I thought I had to stand up at the time when my immediate predecessor would sit down, and clearly I failed.
That's a weird thing to say just right off the bat, because she's saying, she's like under so much intense control that she's even paranoid when it's her turn to stand up.
This is the thing. What we're looking at is, once again, the so-called global elite, and then underneath them, they have players that are in their control. And some of these organisms, one of them, when you go financially and you're going to hit a nation financially, some of the tools you're using are, or the key tools are, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. These are the ones that knocks out different countries and nations' financial situation. They knock them out in different ways. I can go into details about that. And then they offer them loans to save them from this crisis that they discreetly have created for that nation. They offer them these loans, and then in the end, there's absolutely no way that they can ever repay them back. And then they're in the grip of the elite. And the International Monetary Fund, like where she is the head of, and the World Bank, these two are criminal institutions, big, big, big time. I tell you, really, really bad boys.
No, I think you're right. She's just a banker. She talks totally normal. She doesn't talk in codes. Let's have a listen.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for having me with you. I would like to thank the National Press Club, and especially President Angela Grilling-Keen, for not only inviting me to this prestigious venue, but essentially presenting the outline of what I want to talk to you about now. So it's as if we had prepared that together, which we have not. Now, let me first of all, of course, begin by wishing you all a happy new year. I guess it's still time to do that, given that we are just exactly halfway through between our Western New Year and the Lunar New Year, which will loom in a few weeks' time. I think it's also appropriate to wish ourselves a happy new year, given what I would like to talk to you about, which has to do with the global economy and what we should expect for 2014. Now, I'm going to test you numerology skills by asking you to think about the magic seven.
Wait a minute. I thought that she was a banker and an accountant. Why is she talking about numerology and the magic seven?
It is very strange. It's a very unusual speech. It's the only time I've ever heard one on that level start giving talks like that. But just like he said in the beginning, I do as I'm being told. And so why she was doing this thing, I'm not sure. Why they were pushing for the number seven at that point, I'm not sure either. But what I can say is that many of these operations are one of the bases are numerology, with the roots into satanic rituals and very bizarre satanic holidays and offerings. Very, very strange. Very often these alleged terror attacks are carried out, and false flag shootings as well, on days like Halloween. You got like Valentine's, you got Poppy Day, you got Veterans Day, you got very often it's the 22nd of a month. That would be repeated. So sometimes it's 1 year on the 22nd of March, for instance. They keep repeating alleged terror attacks in NATO countries on exactly that date over and over again. And so the numerology, I tell you, except from when it comes to direct assassinations, but bombings and so on very often are connected to this numerology.
I mean, just on the surface, what's creepy is it's like, if this lady's a banker, why does she care what the solar solstice is? Why does she care about the Magic Seven? Shouldn't she be more of like a meat and potatoes, like, hey, we're trying to get the economy going, so this and that. It's like she's just unbelievably superstitious.
It's very strange. Like I said, again, I don't understand why she did this. I think she was told to do it for whatever reason, because it makes absolutely no sense. She's got a press conference. She's going to talk about the situation in the world. And then she brings up the number magic 7. I don't know. What's up with that? I don't know.
Let's keep listening to this weird lady.
Okay. Most of you will know that 7 is quite a number in all sorts of themes, religions. And I'm sure that you can compress numbers as well. So, if we think about 2014, all right, I'm just giving you 2014, you drop the 0, 14, 2 times 7. Okay, that's just by way of example, and we're going to carry on. So 2014 will be a milestone and hopefully a magic year in many respects. It will mark the 100th anniversary of the First World War back in 1914. It will mark the 70th anniversary, drop the 0, 7, of the Bretton Woods Conference that actually gave birth to the IMF. And it will be the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. 25th.
Okay. 2 + 5 = 7. I mean, who's listening to this and go, I don't know. You have to be in the cult to understand what she's saying. Why is it, who cares about 7, you know?
Just like you say, you have to be in the occult to understand what she's talking about. And also, I mean, this sounds like she was chatting at a party at somebody's home on Saturday night with a wine, glass of wine in her hand. Why is she talking about this? It's very, very odd. And I've never heard it before or after in these circumstances. I'm very aware of this speech, but I do not know why she did it.
So she mentioned there Bretton Woods that gave birth to the IMF.
Yeah.
Is that when the cult coalesced?
I know that many, especially around 2015, around that day, many of the alleged terror attacks that happened in Europe were on exact dates that was corresponding to the ending of the Second World War. Different things that happened there, they repeated the theme in these terror attacks on the exact same dates, but how many years was it? I can't remember. But it was exactly the number of years, 70 years after the Second World War.
Mm.
Is it 70? 45 to 2015?
Yes, I believe. Yeah. It's been a while since high school, 60. Man.
Sorry?
It's been a while since high school. I think so.
I think it's 60. So, I'm not sure.
So, You say that when a crisis is initiated by this cabal, in the press of the situation, there will be secret coded language to give a wink and a nod to the people inside the cult that, oh, this is one of ours. This has our signature on it. What is some of that language?
One of the things that I found over the years are color codes. And these are, for instance, you have the Green Spring in North Africa, where these countries are said to have, there's been like revolutions some years ago in the northern kind of African countries, but more or less all of them, you will find the Western intelligence agencies like CIA, Mossad in the background organizing these ones. And they were called the Green Revolution in these countries. Then you had in Ukraine, it was Orange. And then in the last few years in the States, it's been Deep Purple. And in Europe since 2015 and forward has been purple, but more towards the magenta. And these are colors that would be used at funerals. It's ties. You will see somebody in the background, but very dominant in the footage with maybe bright purple hair, deep purple hair. Or a very strong colored shirt, purple, or purple balloons. They have this way of putting them right in the center. So, for instance, once I once I started finding out about these things, for me, it's very easy to see them. Whoops, here's another one. Just like they will see it as well, the people in the know. And the purple one goes under the name of George Soros' Purple Revolution. But this is the backing of the destruction of the world as we know it, building up what is called the New World Order again.
Mm. Are there any things other than colors? Are there numbers that show up in coded letters?
There are shoes. There's shoes and bicycles. This is a good one. You know, like for many years, what I do is I've looked into so many hundreds of these cases, and I've got a super check on everything, because otherwise I would be lost in all of the details. So what I do is I have, like, I call it my research vault. You can find it on my website, lightonconspiracies.com. It's more than 2.3 terabyte of perfectly ordered, like a criminal investigation type of thing, alphabetically ordered in folders, subfolders, you name it. Boom, every single case. And one of the things that I found over the years were all of these shoes that were left on crime scenes. And it was like, if it was in Western countries, European and the US, they were more or less always Nike trainers. Nike, 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 and trainers. And I don't know about you, Eric, but the last time somebody was shooting at me with an AR-15 or whatever, I didn't sit down and take off my shoes before I ran for cover. I just, you know, hit the road. But here, these shoes just popped up over and over and over and over again. And so I was very confused. I started collecting them in a folder just called shoes, and I found them in about 50 different countries. But all of them, when it was connected with some kind of death, it was always something that was connected to death. Mm. And so what I found was that if you look at least from the alleged Holocaust and forward, shoes have become the symbol of death. Like in these alleged concentration camps and gas chambers, you will find big piles of shoes where it says that, look at the shoes, these are proof that so many thousand people died here. But what it's actually proof of is that there's a lot of shoes in that room. And so what I found over the years is that during the Korean War, there were lots of photos with just boots lying around. Also, you have in the Vietnam War, I've got many, many photos from where they said that there was a big fight going on. You don't see anything except boots lying around. The Six-Day War between Israel and Egypt, right out in the middle of the desert, hundreds of boots. And I tell you, if you've ever been to a desert in the summer, I mean, the last thing you want is take off your boots, because your feet will fry.
Is the symbolism like a dead body? They need to put a toe tag on it. Like that's what the coroners do. They put a tag on the toe to identify the body, and then they take the body away. Are they kind of symbolizing that only the shoes are left after these murders? Is that what?
No, not at all. So anyway, so I kept collecting these, and I was starting talking about them in different interviews and so on. I've done between 500 and 1,000 international interviews. And so one day I was contacted by a guy that was a Freemason, and he said, I just want to tell you that one of the reasons for these shoes are they are of Freemasonic value. They are part of the rituals. And I said, what rituals are you talking about? He said, many of these shootings are rituals. They're ritual killings or staged events where the symbol that sort of the secret signal for other Freemasons around the world is that one shoe off, and often with one trousers leg pulled up as well on the victim or whoever it is that is lying there, one shoe off means that that person does it voluntarily, exactly like they do in their own rituals. You can see in any lodge in the US or wherever, when they do their rituals, one trouser leg up and one shoe off means that that person is doing it voluntarily, especially on the lower levels. Then two shoes off means a homage to the sacred space where this ritual is being carried out. So I thought, well, okay, that sort of makes sense because I didn't understand it before. So I started talking about that as well. And then one day I was doing a show together with a former CIA whistleblower and a former independent black op contractor, Cody Snodgrass, who has been very involved in many, many different types of operations and has knowledge, incredible knowledge, also into what is called MKUltra, which is mind control, you know, which has they've been experimenting with since the 50s and the CIA, the KGB, MI6, and so on. And Cody said that he thought that there was another level to these shoes because he said when you break someone down to become an asset that you can control, the way they do it is they put that person through absolute horror, you know, traumatic experiences, rape, torture, horror, horror, horror. And the idea is to break down that personality. And when it comes to a place where the pain is just too intense, what happens is that the personality, just like a one-cell organism, just bloops, turns into two. And so they become aware of that during all of these experiments, that that is what happens. So they could start creating multiple personalities, but they needed what is called a trigger, something that can trigger going so that you will have the personality from your ordinary you to click into the other one that could be controlled. And that trigger could be anything from a song to a symbol to a drawing to something like a shoe. And the way they did it was that every time they raped this person or tortured this person, they were playing that song or showing that symbol right in front of their face, so that in the end it was enough just to show the symbol or play the song, and boom, the person would just go straight into the traumatic state where they swapped the personality, and then that is where that personality could be programmed to do horror stuff or whatever they wanted that person to do. So the trigger is very important for MKUltra, and I'm sure you've seen it on many movies and so on. Somebody is maybe working as a mechanic, doing his ordinary day-to-day life. He gets a phone call, and then somebody's playing Mary Got a Little Lamb in the other end of the phone, and he just boom, clicks into another personality, goes in, grabs his gun, and goes on a mission. That is the trigger. So Cody suggested that since we've seen so many different scenes of horror, you know, brutal killings and all of these things, that every single time what I've found is that they put the shoe right in the center of the image in front, which will affect your subconscious. You will not notice the shoe, but you're every time you see something traumatic, like dead bodies and a plane wreck or whatever, you think, oh my God, oh my God. I've spoken to a psychologist, and he said, what happens is that even though we are fascinated by our own death and destruction, which makes us look at the horror and the gore and the blood and whatever, our eyes try to protect themselves, and then they seek to something that is well known and safe to them. So in this case, that would be the shoe. But the shoe, if that keeps repeating every time you see one of these horror scenes, it will amplify the trauma. So in the end, the shoe itself will be the trigger of this trauma. And if you look here, what has happened over the years is that the shoe has become the trigger. If you, the Las Vegas shooting, for instance, what did New York Times and Washington Post have on page one? They had a Nike trainer and a pool of blood next to it. The symbol of the Las Vegas shooting was a boot with the American flag on it. You have, there were not long ago, there was alleged mass shooting in Dayton, Ohio. What was the images of? Was it the like masses of dead bodies lying around? No, there were 50, I tell you, 50, that's 50, trainers lying in a parking lot with cordon off tape, you know, the police plastic tape around that, and saying, this is the site of a mass killing. So I ask you, Eric, how can 50 trainers be left there as proof of a mass murder? Where did the victims go? I mean, did they just vaporize, or were they hit by some kind of laser beam and zoomed up to Scotty or what? Do you know, like, it doesn't make any sense. But I've found these shoes over and over and over in the hundreds. I've even done shows you can find on YouTube. It's one of them is called The Soulless, that's S-O-U-L, The Soulless Shoes of Death, where I go through hundreds, you can see for yourself, hundreds and hundreds of these cases. But then it's come to a point where the trigger to get us into this traumatic state, because that is where they want us. They want us fearful at all times, because that is where we can be controlled. But after I started pointing this out in so many different interviews, and now I get from all over the world, people are sending me photos of shoes in connection to these different operations. So it's almost becoming like a joke. Oh my God, none more shoes. Oh my God, another shoe. So now I think they're phasing in or fading it over into bicycles. So from the Austin bombing, that's one of the first times they started using the bicycle instead. So now we have bicycles that are lying there, very often center in the center of the image, just the bicycle there. So you have death and destruction in the background and a bicycle. Mm. And death and destruction and a bicycle lying down. It would have the exact same effect.
Maybe the symbolism is some sort of like that they get away. It's like they got away with it. They ran away in their shoes. They got away with it. They got on their bicycle. The hitman got away. Maybe it's something like this.
For sure, for sure. But you would see, like, even in the articles, they say, like, if you go to the Dayton, Ohio shooting, it says that several people ran out of their shoes. I quote, ran out of their shoes. Mm. That is something that is used over and over again. They ran out of their shoes. How can you do that? I mean, it's very hard to run out of your shoes. then recently there was two supermarket shootings in Thailand, they claim. And what was there? There was a car that was shut up, they say. And then right in front of it, there were three shoes, very nicely put, and some blood next to it. Inside the supermarket, another shooting. What was the photo of? A shoe. You have now the China virus, what was in the background. Look for it, and you will see lots of bicycles lying around behind people with masks. Or the latest alleged shooting and stabbing in London. What was right there in the middle? Shoes. And it was in front of a shoe shop called Boots. And another shooting that took place very close to it was right in front of a shop's window that was called Shoe Zone. You know, so you have to look for these things because it goes into your subconscious. That is how they try to reach you, to get you fearful at all costs.
Mm. One person who survived one of these things, the Las Vegas massacre, this woman called Kimberly Schomel, she posted to Facebook her testimony of what happened. So there's the mainstream narrative of what happened, but this woman, Kimberly Schomel, wrote it right down to Facebook as soon as she got home. And I want to read this. From about 50 feet in front of us and a little to the right, firecrackers were set off. Let me repeat, firecrackers were set off. I verbally said, some asshole just shot off firecrackers in a close proximity to so many people. I was literally pissed off. I would say 15 seconds later, the first volley of gunfire was released. It was a shorter volley than any of the others, and the gunfire was not just close to us either. Everyone looked up, down. We thought it was just more firecrackers. Once the third volley was over, Cassie linked arm in mine, and we decided that we had to run like hell. So we ran. So then they kept running, and then there were people following them. They said, we couldn't hide because they, and I do mean they, were chasing us. So as we were running and approaching this fence, men are throwing women over, and we ran up, and they had knocked it down, so we were able to get out. So they were fenced in, but all the hordes of people pushed this fence over, which was meant to contain them as the people on the ground. What I find so fascinating about this is this just shows the psychological operation. First, they put down firecrackers. They were already laid down, a string of firecrackers were laid down before any of the audience got there. they start setting off these firecrackers to go, oh, these are explosives, but they're safe. So when these firecrackers go off, they're just firecrackers. So that was to precognitively condition people that, oh, there's some annoying firecrackers, but it's safe. Then they start shooting. So that immediately, that 10 seconds, they're confused as to whether or not they're firecrackers or gunfire, and then people start dying around her. It's so dark.
The Las Vegas one is one that I'm still very confused about. It's very, very different to all the other ones. It is multi-layered in a way that I've very rarely seen. And I think there were multiple different operations going on at the same time. These operations were even not even aware of each other. That's how they do these really advanced operations sometimes, that the different teams on the ground are not aware of other operations going on, which also makes it an absolute mess for someone like myself to look into, because it's just pointing in all different directions. But I can tell you the official story is 100% absolute bullshit. Absolute bullshit. It has, there's not a true word there at all. But what actually happened that day, very, very advanced and very confusing. There's also, I believe that she was one of the people that died afterwards. Is that correct?
Yes. October 9, 2017, she died from pituitary gland failure. Another guy called Chad Nishimura disappeared. He was a valet. He disappeared October 11th. Another woman, Lorraine Carver, died in a car accident October 16, 2017. Danny Carterares was shot in his house October 24, 2017. Temeculus Orfanzos was killed in the Thousand Oaks massacre November 9th. So he shows up to the Las Vegas one, he survives it, then he's killed in the Thousand Oaks massacre. Roy McClellan was killed in a hit-and-run car accident November 17, 2017. So between October 9th, 2017 and November 7th, 2017, just a 6 weeks period, six people are killed. All witnesses, survivors.
Yeah, when it comes to the Thousand Oaks, the borderline shooting, that is an absolute crap hoax, super duper, nothing really happened. There was about 50 people inside that dance club there that were from Las Vegas, that were at the Las Vegas shooting. And this is what we see over and over again, recycling of the same individuals, going from location to location as part of the troop that are carrying these operations out. So that one, the Thousand Oaks, absolute BS. So did he die or did he not there? I don't know. But the other victims here, some of them I know for sure are real. And it's also, I remember, this is a long time now. There's been so many cases since then, so I hope I'm correct here. But I remember there was one of these car crashes that they died. I think it was a couple. They died in a car crash, they say. But the thing is, when you look at the car crash itself, it was like very low speed area. It was just a few hundred yards from the garden, and the car went up in flames, and this fire was very, very hard to stop. So that shows you that it's a very unusual fire, and it's a type of fire that you will see the same type of car fires in the forest fires or alleged forest fires in California, Greece, Portugal, Sweden, where you see very strange anomalies around how these cars are hit and the temperature of the fires. It was exactly the same around 9/11 as well. There was, I think there were 1,600 cars that popped around this area. Not normal fires, but you have like the whole engine blocks melts, or the rims of the wheels are melting. At the same time, rubber next to it is intact, or pieces of paper are lying right next to it, not turn on fire, and the grass is green and so on. So we're looking at a totally different type of weapon technology. And I think that some of these hits are done with weapons that we are normally not aware of. But I would very much like to point at the Lockheed Martin. If you go into that website, you will see that they've been developing what is called directed energy weapons since the 40 years back. And these are the types of weapons that are used with lasers as well to start these fires in California and other places, where you will see that it's not normal fires. These houses are, it's the houses, the buildings are hit, not nature, not at all. It's the houses, and they're totally leveled with the ground. It's the fire normally would sort of burn anything from that is made from tree or clothes or wood or whatever. But here we see that concrete, the tiles, metal, everything is gone. And that shows you also they talk about firestorms where the temperatures are so high, and it's like a fire tornado as well. So that we're talking at looking at totally different weapon technology that are sometimes used against civilians as well.
Now, if we can go back to the Las Vegas massacre, you know, a lot of Freemasonic symbolism is in there. We're in front of the Sphinx. We're in front of the Luxor, which is a massive pyramid with a light at the top. These Kabbalists believe that they are at the top of the pyramid and the peasants are below. They're beasts of burden, stakes on the table. They are there. They are the puppet masters of everybody beneath them. So they took place in front of these symbols, and there was during the Harvest Festival. So they were these country music fans. Now, you know, if you're raised on a farm, the harvest is when, you know, you pick all the corn, but perhaps there was a darker symbolism behind the harvest of these music-going patrons.
Like I say, once again, the Las Vegas one is very, very advanced, multi-layered, and I think there was a whole different level into it. I really believe that there was normally I don't go into these areas, but do you know the Illuminati card game?
No, they have a deck of cards, like a tarot deck?
Yeah, but this one has been, it was printed, the last edition was printed in 1995, and in it, it's about world domination, how you play for world domination, and so many of these cards have predicted future events in great, great detail. But there's also, human hunting. Yes. We go into areas that I normally avoid, but, you know, like for these people that are in the so-called elite, they say they're at the top of the pyramid. I would say this pyramid is turned upside down. They are as low as you can get. It's down in the absolute pits of the very, very dark and satanic areas. I mean, and one of the things that I've heard many testimonials about is that people have been invited to these so-called elite parties. And one of the biggest thrills have been human hunting. Instead of hunting geese or deer, they have been invited. And the thing is that instead the target or what they're hunting down are people, like in Hunger Games, that type of thing. And it seems like in Las Vegas this day that there were also this type of thing going on, because we had helicopters, there were at least one helicopter that was flying around and with machine gun firing down into the crowds. We had shooters from the top of the pyramid. We had shooters from different locations that was absolutely not on the 32nd floor where Stephen Paddock is said to have been. He had nothing to do with this at all. He was just the patsy for the whole thing. But very many, very strange things were going on this night, also with the coroners, with body disappearing, with them shutting down anything, with other dead people in other casinos. And it's very complicated, Eric. So I would prefer speaking about things that I know more sure what actually happened, because I'm still confused. I know certain things, but I'm very aware that I do not know about other stuff in this event.
Well, we were just talking about how the coded language and how do you know, and if the Scottish Rite goes up to, you know, most of them make the 32nd degree, and then we have them firing out of the 32nd floor, that's certainly a symbolism on the deck. Let's have a palate cleanser. You know, you talk about how in other interviews that the music industry is completely run by the Satanists. And I found this woman, I played this on my podcast before, her name's Melanie Martinez. And in a lot of her music videos, she's in a mental hospital, she's tied to a bed, she's being, drugs are being shot into her veins, her eyes are peeled open as she watches different, like, music videos and weird programming. So they're just describing what MK Ultra is via Melanie Martinez's music videos. But I've isolated one segment from her song called Principle, and I'd like to play this. I'll try to make you listen, but you won't, it's your way. Riot, killing kids all day and night. She says, killing kids all day and night.
Well, what can I say?
She's singing to a panel of principals of the school that are dressed like judges with the wigs on, and she's singing to them during her testimony in front of the principal, killing kids all night and day. I mean,
it's bizarre. And very often you will see that, like, maybe there's a song that is about one thing, but the videos are totally Freemasonic, like massive big Freemasonic rituals that has nothing to do with the lyrics. You know, so what used to be very innocent with MTD and so on has now turned into like a whole bizarre cabal show. It's the same with the Super Bowl show as well, the big one in the middle of the game. It's like one big Freemasonic ritual. Yeah, being played out right in front of you.
You know, Rihanna has a song called Love on the Brain, and it's all about how even though her boyfriend's abusive, she still loves him and all this stuff. And so I watched the video and I expected to see, you know, her with this abusive man and, you know, she can't get enough of the love. It's kind of like an innocent song. But then when you watch the video, she goes into a room and it's gold gilded and there's Egyptian motifs everywhere, and it's like completely Masonic symbolism everywhere. And she doesn't even have a lover in the music video. So it's like, you know, who did this?
That is a very good question. And you will see that this is repeated over and over and over again. And especially if you take one of these videos and just go frame by frame by frame, and really look for what is in. I mean, nothing is there by coincidence. These are shot in film studios where nothing is there just by chance. Mm. And once you start seeing that, sometimes you have to look upside down and so on because your subconscious will just take in whatever it sees. And it's just unbelievable. They're loaded with Freemasonic symbolism, satanic symbolism. And who are watching this? It's young kids, children, that are not even aware of it and go straight into their subconscious. So it's a very dark agenda, I think.
And one of the guys, this guy called Patrick Clawson, he did this speech in front of some think tank, and he's a lobbyist from Israel. And he got his doctorate in economics from New School University, which is where I went to undergraduate. But he gives the creepiest talk, which is almost like the bad guy in a James Bond film accidentally giving James Bond the entire evil plan because he put him strapped him to a death machine. So he's like, well, you're going to die anyway. Let me tell you the evil plan.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor.
Had to wait for Pearl Harbor. what's best for U.S. interests is if we're at perpetual war. I mean, we had to wait for Pearl Harbor to send 50,000 Americans to their death in Vietnam. It's very hard for the president to see how we would get to war with Iran. Crisis initiation.
It is, once you start seeing how this, how they think, how they work, how they, it's the same all the time. These dark forces, they want death and destruction. That is what they thrive on. The fear, the absolute terror, making billions and then rebuilding it so that they can blow it up again. The demonizing leaders so that they can assassinate them, so that they can replace them with their own puppies and just do the whole game over. Even sometimes use the puppy to start new wars. I mean, the U.S. has been at war since forever and ever and ever and ever. You tell me one other nation that has been at war more than once or twice ever. It's, I mean, I'm sure people in the U.S. is not going to be flattered by this, but I tell you, I got from CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum. He said that the terror tool of the world is the U.S. Army. And I would like to agree with him to a large extent, because the way that the U.S. Army is being used is through, it's like a death tool for the so-called elite. They're using it as an enforcer and sending innocent soldiers into areas where it has nothing to do with wars, like Iran, Afghanistan, no, sorry, Iraq, both wars, Iraq and Afghanistan. These are based on the 9/11 attacks, but there was absolutely no Iraqis officially or Afghanis in the planes. They were all from Saudi. And now, I mean, it's obvious for more or less everyone, I think, that it was an absolute inside job where the U.S. some core, very criminal elements in the detail, backed with by Israel and then with Saudi money that carried out that operation. It had nothing to do with Afghanistan or Iraq. And with Afghanistan, we're back to the poppy fields, the heroin trade, that was also one of the major reasons for the Vietnam War, that they kept that going and going and going. It was about drugs to a large extent, and from the Gold Triangle, where tons of drugs were smuggled home inside, I'm sorry to say, inside the bodies of dead American soldiers with a flag on top, very nicely put. But that was one of the major reasons why this war was kept on and on. And these, they create these things. Pearl Harbor, they knew about it. They were waiting for it. They were withdrawing so that it would absolutely happen. It was an absolute setup, false flag operation. They were just waiting for it to happen. And with 9/11, the year before 9/11, they had put together a study where they said, we need to create a new Pearl Harbor. What we need is a new Pearl Harbor. And that came in 9/11 with 9/11. And so they had these, they're called false flag operations. You got the Gulf of Tonkin incident, absolute stage event, nothing happened. But that was used by Johnson to get the U.S. started in the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and Robert McNamara in his dotage has admitted that, oh, it was just a miscommunication. I received the wrong Morse code. I thought that something happened, you know.
It is absolute, once again, bullshit. It is such lies, but this is how they do it. This is how they do it. And you were talking about the music industry before. Do you know who was the commander on the ship that was officially attacked on and that Gulf of Tonkin incident?
Who was the?
It was Jim Morrison. Jim Morrison's father.
Mm.
And he appeared more or less at the same time. And both of them withdrew or officially died. Jim, the son, officially died. And the father, on the very same day, they pulled out of operation. I tell you, there are many question marks around Jim Morrison's death. One of them that is very much doubtful when it comes to his. And the whole setup of many of the rock groups in the 60s are from Laurel Canyon outside Los Angeles, where you have a massive big CIA base in the middle. And that is also where the whole LSD thing was created through where the CIA was giving it out freely at big at these big festivals like the Monterey Festival, Woodstock, and so they're pumping these acid tabs out there in the thousands to get this generation hooked on drugs. It was also in Laurel Canyon where the whole hippie movement started, from a very, very small little group and very close to this, what is it called? The CIA base right in the, a massive CIA base right in the middle of this tiny little area up in the mountains outside Los Angeles. I tell you, it is so many of these things are coordinated hand in hand, but in many different areas of society.
Seems like because the military, they're a big part of the military is drumming up new business, so they need a big propaganda arm to conjure ways for us to go to war, which is their goal all along. So the music industry is just a propaganda wing of the military industrial complex to keep people distracted and stupid, so they don't know that their government is just tyrannically murdering people all over the world to steal their resources. It's a coordinated effort.
Yeah, that's one part of it. You've got the military-industrial complex. You also got the medical-industrial complex, the big pharma, which is totally in bed with the two. I mean, they're totally coordinated. Absolute criminal. And then you got the industrial prison complex, which is coordinated and owned by the same forces as well. So there were, in the early 90s, there was a meeting in Los Angeles where a lot of the key people in the music business were called into a meeting at a private home. There was this testimony leaked out from this guy who said that they just went up there and there were these people, you know, civilians in suits. And he said, I had no idea who they were, but they had to sign this contract of confidentiality.
Non-disclosure agreement.
To gag them. And once they were in the meeting, the people who refused to sign the paper were kicked out. And then the meeting started. And then they said, welcome here. We just want to tell you that there's new things happening here in the music scene. And what we want to introduce to you is gangster rap. We want to hip-hop in, and then that turn into gangster rap. And the whole idea is to knock out minorities, to promote violence, and get people in prison. And the younger, the better, because it's in the prisons that they can make massive business out of the slave worker force. You know, for one thing, they work for nothing. But also, you got taxpayers' money. It's like you having a hotel with like 3,000 rooms. And so the more people you can get in there that pay rent for every single night, the better for you as an owner, correct? Mm. So nowadays, in the U.S., you got this third strike, a three-time strike or whatever it's called. I mean, soon, it's like you've got like people that have not paid their parking tickets together with hardcore killers. And they're just being pushed in. There are more prisoners in the U.S., than in anywhere in the rest of the world, including China.
And then so they're just combined. They're sewing shoes together to be put in Illuminati newspapers after massacres.
Well, who knows?
For 15 cents an hour.
There's a really good movie called Wag the Dog with Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman. I tell you, I recommend you to see that one. That shows you how they set many of these false flag operations up. And also, the shoes are right in the middle of that one. They even got the hero, the veteran that returns home, is called the Old Shoe. And Willie Nelson, who is also in this movie, they want him to write sort of like a propaganda song, and that is called the Old Shoe as well. And then they travel around and throw up shoes hanging over the phone cables and all up in the trees to get a whole movement going. So the shoes are very central in that movie, and also how they can manage to use the media that they control to such a large extent to push the attention of the public into whatever direction they want.
Yeah, I've seen that movie. They're like, well, let's have a war with just our special effects. So they kind of use TV effects to make a war going on so they can get in this money. But I want to go back to...
They start a war, but there is no war. But the public believe that there's a war against Albania, but there is not. They're just creating it out of thin air to distract the attention away from problems inside the White House at the moment. So it's very, very interesting.
Can I go back to this company called Crisis Solutions Limited, which seems to be a subcontractor of the IMF and NATO to carry out more of the dark operations? Crisis Solutions Limited operates out of London. How did you get onto their trail that these people were behind some of these operations?
It's before every single false flag operation. When there's an attack or mass shooting that is not real, that is not the real thing, but a staged event, which is most of them, there are always a drill before. The drill is there to get rid of normal people in that area. They want to close off the streets in that area, get rid of anyone that can be too nosy or see too much. So they officially go on and say, we're going to have a drill here for your protection. It's going to be an active shooter drill or FEMA drill or whatever. Please bugger off, leave us alone. So they would come there the day before, set the whole thing up with cameras, with smoke bombs, with explosives, with crisis actors, directors, marketing agents. You got makeup artists, you got clothing, you got what are these potteries, I don't know what they're called, moving toilets, catering, all of that set up. And then they rehearse what they're going to do. And then also they have to get some of the footage that is then used when the real thing goes live. They use some of the footage from the rehearsal so that they got the good shots already prepared. That is why you never see a mass shooting or a terror attack on a rainy day. Never, ever. It's always sunny. And that is because they need to have at least 2 days in a row with the same sky so that they can mix the footage from the rehearsal and the drill and with live footage so they can mix it. Otherwise, we would see, oh, it's sunny, no, it's great. No, it's sunny, oh, no, it's great. So that's, you, I guarantee you, please show me one when it's a rainy day, it's not happening. So what were we talking about?
Crisis Solutions Limited. Can I read something? I grabbed this from their website yesterday. This is what their intent, they say that this is their... This is their mission statement as a company, Crisis Solutions Limited. Crisis management simulations offer unique opportunity to validate your end-to-end business continuity arrangements to get senior management buy-in to crisis management planning and to enable crisis management team members to practice their roles in response. Using realistic scenarios, a crisis management team exercise will deal with the escalation of a crisis and enable all participants to stress test a business continuity and crisis management plans. A well-executed crisis simulation exercise will provide a full gap analysis to further require planning, training, and resources. Now, it sounds like banal management speak, but what they're kind of coding in there is management, a buy-in to crisis management. So these different corporations can buy into a crisis to get a desired result.
I found them just before, they had a drill the day before the Westminster Bridge attack, where there was a car, they said, allegedly drove up on the pavement and killed five people right outside the Big Ben in central London. And this crisis solutions company were there the day before practicing the exact same scenario of somebody jumping. One of the victims is said to have jumped from the bridge, and they picked up people in the river. So that was the first time I encountered them. And so that put me on track with them. And I tell you, my God, but they're only one company of multiple companies that I think are working together, many of them. You've got CrisisX on New Zealand and in Australia. You've got CrisisCast. You've got, you can also rent whole crowds if you need crowds in the background. For instance, a rally, a political rally, or if you're a pop star with out an audience, or they will even help you with a script so that you can have pro-abortion or anti-abortion, whatever you need, you can rent a whole crowd for the background action. There's a company called crowdsondemand.com. You can go in there. So you have these crisis actors company. You've got also companies that set the whole thing up. You can, like I say, you can rent the crowd in the background, whatever you need. Like in Charlottesville, where people saw on location, they saw five buses coming into town before that whole thing happened with a car attack, the alleged car attack in Charlottesville a year or so ago, where people, there were people coming out with KKK t-shirts on and Black Lives Matters, sitting, speaking, having coffee together before the rally. I mean, they even were bringing out the signs, everything from the same buses. So what we're looking at is a set stage where a theater thing is being played out there to create chaos and spread fear. That's the whole idea.
So the different CIA talking points are on different T-shirts of the planned opposing, just like professional wrestling. Then they put everybody together, they get the cameras, and they roll.
It's exactly like that. It's exactly like that. And so who's going to win today? Well, it depends on what is the client want and who is the client. Well, in this case, it's the U.S. government or the State Department or whatever, or it's Israel, or it's in France or whatever. You just, and what I've been tracking down and I started to identify is what I call the Global Tour of Terror, which is like a mobile unit that is being transported in big C-130 Army planes from American Air Force bases to NATO Air Force bases, landing after dark, and then they're being transported. They're a group of around from 30 up to 150 people, just like a rock band on tour, with everything exactly the same. Like, say that it was a theater group on tour. It's the exact same setup with pyrotechnics, with smoke bombs, explosives, with makeup, like I described before, catering, dressing. You've got amputee actors as well, which is really good if you want disaster things to look really scary, you know, like blown off arms or legs, like at the Boston bombing, for instance. They're called amputee amps, where you can rent people that were born without certain limbs or have lost them in accidents and so on. And then it's very easy with some makeup, you know, put on a stump of a leg or whatever, put on some ketchup and some whatever, minced meat, and boom, it looks horrific, but it's not real. You also got companies, rentamourner.com or rentamourner.co.uk, where you can rent people to attend fake funerals of alleged victims, where they're really good at crying and looking sad. And so the thing is, what I'm trying to do is I try to go on location as often as I can. I've been to, I don't know how many places here in Europe. I've been in certain places in the States as well, trying to find out what the hell happened. You know, I'm not there to prove a point. I'm there to find out what happened. Is the official story true? Did ISIS terrorists do it like this, or was something else going on here? And I tell you, I should be a super expert on Muslim terrorists. I know nothing. I've never encountered a real Muslim terrorist. But what I do encounter all the time are secret intelligence agencies, CIA, Mossad, NATO, the Gladio Network. These are the ones that are carrying out these operations. And it's always in the same countries as well. It's countries that either belong to NATO or belong to, there's a secret security agreement of some countries. It was created after the Second World War. One of them is called Five Eyes, like the ones you're looking out of, Five Eyes. You can Google them. It was created right after the Second World War. It's US, UK, New Zealand, Canada, and Australia. Then you got Nine Eyes and you got 14 Eyes. These are different constellations of countries. And it's here we see the hidden, how they're pulling the threads and how the attacks are happening over and over and over again, more or less at the exact same place. So, for instance, if it's in Australia, I can guarantee you that if there's an alleged terror attack in Australia, it will be in Sydney or Melbourne, more or less 100% sure that it will be in Melbourne and will be outside the Flinders train station, that, because that is an area they control. And they just repeat it over and over and over again. And also, I can tell you that how I've been able to predict now 20 confirmed of these attacks up to 2 months before they actually happen on international radio, because it's mind-blowing once you get into this bizarre world.
Well, you have that Illuminati card deck, and so that's tipping you off. I want to talk about the Kobe Bryant death, because there was a lot of symbolism and prediction. There was this a cartoon on Comedy Central called The Legends of Chamberlain Heights. They had an episode called The End of Days, which was November 16th of 2016. They predicted Kobe Bryant's death in a helicopter, and I have that clip right queued up. So let's listen to The Legends of Chamberlain Heights that predicted Kobe's death. So a helicopter just crashes, and then Kobe Bryant sneaks out of it.
It's Kobe Bryant.
Help me.
Just pass me the trophies, and we'll pull you out.
Pass.
Okay, so he says, just pass me the trophies, and we'll pull you out. Now, what happened the night before this helicopter crash is LeBron James passed Kobe Bryant's record. So he passed the trophies on to LeBron James. As Kobe Bryant's head is sticking out of this destroyed helicopter, he's holding two NBA trophies, which is a basketball at the top of a pillar. Speaking of symbolism, in Freemasonry, the initiate stands between two pillars with balls on the top, spheres on the top. And these pillars in Masonry are called Boaz and Joachim. And they symbolize light versus dark, fire versus water. And this is the same symbol that we see Kobe Bryant standing as an initiate between the two pillars.
There's a lot of strange things around this this death. You know, his death was predicted already in 2012 on November the 13th. We're back to numerology again, November the 13th here. But 2012, where there's a Twitter account called .noso that says Kobe is going to end up dying in a helicopter crash. That is, and this has been confirmed, it's been retweeted like 170,900 times since then. So how is that possible? What are the chances? And like I mentioned before, CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum, he was recruited as a 19-year-old and ended up working for the CIA. He was extremely good, or he is extremely good at flying anything with wings on. So he has been flying all the presidents from Nixon up to George Bush Sr. And in the end, he also, many years of his life, he worked as an assassin, a hitman, but for George Bush Sr. And he ended up as the commander for his Bush Sr.'s private hit team called Pegasus, carrying out at least 40 hits in the Western Europe and so on. So he's the real deal, I tell you that one. And he told me, and I got it recorded as well, that he used to do all kinds of flights in and out of the U.S. and, you know, like secret missions and so on. And many times he was flying to individuals that he thought was dead, you know, like high-level individuals that officially was dead. And he said his job was to fly the plane, not to ask questions. He said that he knew if he would start asking questions in his business, he would not live that long, so he'd never ask. But he said many, many times he flew people, dead people from the U.S. to Canada to get a new identity, to get a new life. So it's not unusual. It is not, you know, like a one-in-a-lifetime thing. And also, with you just see the FBI protection, the witness protection
program. Yeah.
Program, exactly. How new identities are created. And very often, or at least some people, you know, when their career is over and it comes to a point where suddenly they're dead, they're worth more dead than alive. You know, like if you're a singer like Whitney Houston or Michael Jackson, when you hit the 50s and you're not that popular anymore, then suddenly you die and boom, the sales go up like, whoa, they skyrocketed and the people behind the scenes are making billions once again on your name. But this time you are at least officially dead. Some of these people die, some of them don't. I can't prove about COVID, but I think there's a lot of very strange things about that crash. Also, when you look at the witnesses that saw the crash, you will see that out of the three people that I know, two of them were actors. I mean, okay, it's Los Angeles, there's many actors. But another one was a guy that had a background with being drunk, and he was in jail, and now he was out in outside a church, possible. But the different stories about when this helicopter came, like one witness says the fog was so thick that he could only hear the sound. And then the other one said that his partner saw the helicopter crash. And there's another thing with a helicopter, you know, like if you go into fog, why don't you just land it? And even if the engine stops working, you can still land a helicopter. It's called, there's a special technical term on how to land a helicopter without the engine, because the rotor itself will just continue rotating and you can just land it. It will be a bit bouncy, but you can land it without the engine. So what happened there? And why did they fly in such thick fog? Mm. You know, just to go to a basketball game, it doesn't match up. And then you see the husband of, there was a man called Matt Mauser. He's the husband of one of the victims in this crash, a woman, Christina Mauser. And when he's being interviewed about this thing, there's something called duping delight. It's a psychological term about people, certain people, when they lie and they know that they're manipulating, they cannot stop laughing or smiling. It's the body is doing it. It's this psychological phenomenon called duping delight. And here we have this guy sitting, smiling. His wife just died, was burnt in a helicopter crash. I mean, that's awful, awful. And he's sitting, smiling in between. And then he's trying to look like he's crying, but there's absolutely no tears, no nothing. So, it's a suspicious one, I tell you. And then also you have all of the colors again and the numerologies. You have the purple. I know that is the colors of the team as well. But the color purple was just so dominant, and that's exactly the color we were talking about before.
Yeah, and speaking of the shoes, I am looking at this Chamberlain Heights titled End of Days, and before they encounter Kobe Bryant's crash, for no reason, the kids of Chamberlain Heights are walking down the street, and these two shoes appear on an electric scooter, and they just whiz by right before they encounter Kobe Bryant. It just whizzed
could
by the bottom.
Send that?
Huh?
That please send that to me. That I've never seen.
Yeah. But so these shoes that are disembodied that whiz by on a scooter. I'll take a screenshot for you and send it over.
Thank you. Also, the Kobe Bryant was in a Nike commercial, and once again, we were talking about Nike shoes before. That is a very, 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 very suspicious company. And Kobe Bryant was in this commercial together with Wesley Snipes. And in it, you have Wesley Snipes in a helicopter, and Kobe Bryant takes a basketball, throws it at the helicopter, and the helicopter crashes. And then Kobe Bryant is standing, and you've got the Nike logo in flames right in front of him.
What do you
think?
So
you have the helicopter crash there as well.
Do you see the screenshot? I just sent it to you on the chat. Have a look.
Let's
at the bottom of the screen there. See that? They're just these.
I do not see the shoes.
Do you see the?
Oh God, yeah.
See, this just whizzes by that... the bottom of the screen right before they encounter the helicopter.
Well, I mean, that is the message of death if you ever seen it. I mean, what is that? And that these shoes that have no part of the story otherwise, have they?
Not at all. They're not connected to any of the participants. They just whiz by from the left of the screen to the right of the screen just before they meet Kobe.
So I tell you, from now on, Eric, you are gonna see shoes quite a lot. I tell you that because this is the way they appear. And so, is that a coincidence yet again with these shoes? Had it just been here, but I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shoes that I found.
Yeah, and I would just play the clip, and as I was freezing the clip, ready to play it for the podcast, these shoes are at the bottom of the screen. They appear just before Kobe comes out.
That's some real.
And we just talked about it. I'm like, wait a minute, I think I see another example. What a hallmark of this cult.
Yeah. And what is that figure down in the corner here with a gun? Does he have any part of the story as well?
No, I don't know. See, I didn't watch the full episode, so this is just the clip. Let's watch the clip again. No, the baby just shot. Oh, the baby shot the helicopter down. So this baby's standing in the corner with a gun, and he shoots in the air in some depraved ghetto. And he lands this helicopter, and the helicopter is purple and yellow, just the color of the Lakers. Helicopter itself is purple and yellow. Boom.
But so I ask you this question: how many other celebrities have you seen things like this where they die in a helicopter crash? I don't think I've ever seen any cartoons or any Twitter, anything like that with a helicopter crash. And I mean, a helicopter crash is not that normal.
So yeah, like chances? A plane crash what is are the more. Chances? Yeah, exactly. Like, of all the ways to die, a car accident, a plane crash, a heart attack, of all the ways to die, they pick the right one and they put it, they dress the helicopter in the Lakers colors. And then the night before LeBron passes his records. And these kids are asking Kobe to pass over his trophies. Give me your trophies.
Well, do you know, sometimes also, we were talking about the music business and so on, where there's this saying that they sign a deal with the devil and they sell their souls to the devil.
Yeah.
And it's coming more and more to the point where that sounds more and more true, I tell you, where whatever the devil is, but... that they sign over, they will get the fame and fortune, but the dark force will have them by the balls. And so once the contract is out, many of them seems to also have to sacrifice a close one, a brother, a child, a mother. Many of these very successful artists have people very close to them that have died in quite brutal ways sometimes. Is that just a coincidence, or is it part of the deal for the success when they sell out?
Yeah, I remember.
And you listen to many of the lyrics. They're the ones talking about it. Listen to the interview with Bob Dylan, where he openly says that he signed a contract with a big commander, you know, the guy below. There's so many of them saying the exact same thing.
Kanye West, I believe his mom died, she was getting plastic surgery and she died on the table like right before his career took off. So they have to, they dress up these sacrifices in different ways.
There's so many of them. If it was only one, I wouldn't even notice, but there's so many of them. Check out really successful artists in the close, like in their nearest family. You know, parents, brother, sister, children, their babies. You will see their spouses that they've lost someone. And I don't know. I just know that if I were someone that really wanted to be famous and wanted to get into this music scene. And so I would be very cautious because there's some brutal forces in the background.
Yeah, I mean, I got my degree in screenwriting and, you know, I do stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedy, I can say whatever I want. There's no middleman. But, I to break into the next level with screenwriting, I've written many screenplays, but I'm not initiated in any sort of cabal, nor will I ever be initiated into any sort of cabal. And I wonder if that's going to prevent me from breaking through the glass ceiling my whole life, you know?
You have no idea. But speaking of stand-ups, I think it's quite funny because recently there was an alleged attack in London, central London, that was labeled terror attack. Where a guy was running around with a knife and he was shot to death. He was the guy that was it was outside Boots and also Zone, Shoe Zone. But one of the witnesses there who was later interviewed, it's always on the same programs that these people are interviewed, he was a stand-up comedian and he was also a witness at the recent London Bridge attack. Mm. You know, where what are the chances? But many times you see the exact same people being recycled over and over and over again. In the U.S., the show that are interviewing people that are part of these operations is Ellen's show. They will be interviewed there. Often it will be exclusives for Ellen's show. You had it after the Las Vegas. You've had it after many of the other ones where they're handpicked there. And I don't think that is by coincidence.
Mm. Yeah, well. Yeah, and then Ellen, like, pals around with George W. Bush when a lot of the American public has woken up that, if you don't agree that 9/11 was an inside job, everyone agrees that we went into Iraq to steal oil. And she's palling around with him, like, dancing with him. Hey, look at this cool guy. And it's like, everyone knows he's a war criminal, you know? Mm. But yeah, I mean, yes, I guess if you're a comedian in London, the rent is high, so you might have to take some extra work with Crisis Solutions Limited and show up to the different shootings, you know?
I think that's the name of the game.
Tough out there for an actor. That's a tough acting gig.
Yeah, but I tell you, every single time that when something happens, what I found is that most alleged eyewitnesses to a mass shooting or a alleged terror attack, at least in Europe, most of the times the eyewitnesses that are being interviewed on TV they belong to one or three groups. It's either some kind of media, radio, TV, newspaper journalism, somehow they have a connection to media, or it's film theater there, or you have some kind of ties to the government. One of these three groups. So, for instance, when the alleged Stockholm truck attack happened, there were 24 eyewitnesses that I found on international media that said that they saw the truck hit people. So I tracked down every single one of them. And how many would be part of one of these three groups on a normal street on a normal Friday afternoon if the truck went into a crowd? How many of these 24% on a percentage thing would be part of either media, film theater, or had government ties? What would be a natural?
Maybe one or percentage? Zero would be 1 or 0%.
Yeah, exactly that. I would say, let's say three of them would be quite high, but of five, I found 21 out of 24, and the last three I'm not sure about. Mm. You know, so that just shows you, and these people very often have a career that goes really good. You know, they get a new show, they get this, they get that, but in my world, what they're doing, they're selling out and are part of betraying their countries, because that is what is happening. Mm.
You know, and it's like this, the IMF chief Christine Lagarde, you know, it seems like she's top of the world, but then when it comes...
Cold. And I thought I had to stand up at the time when my immediate predecessor would sit down, and...
She's even, like, she doesn't even know when she could stand up. She wants to always be following orders. She can't even like stand up with confidence on her own two feet.
This is not a top position individual at all. It's one of the people being ordered to do stuff. They sit on a position, but they're absolutely not the ones making the decisions. They're just there as an ice front, as always.
Yeah.
Eric, I need to shoot off soon, so.
Thank you so much, Ole. The website is lightonconspiracies.com. You're on tour right now. Do you have any events that you'd like to speak about? I mean, my audience is actually a lot of European listeners.
I'm going to Sweden very soon, here around the anniversary of the alleged assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister. There's a lot of times I use the word alleged. I hope you notice that, because it's a very bizarre arena to get into with these alleged terror attacks and assassinations. And then I'm on tour most of May in Scandinavia, Sweden and Norway, and then I'm planning on going to England as well. But let's see how that goes. But I'm trying to get out and reach out to as many people as possible, because I think this is the time in history when things are changing, either for the better or for worse. But this is really at a turning point, a crossroad, where we have a chance to create a beautiful, beautiful future, or we can sit and pick our belly button and do nothing, and then we're going down the drains. So the choice is ours.
Thanks, Ole. Take care, my friend.
You too. Have a good one.
He's Ole Demigard. This has been episode 245 of the Highway Diary podcast. The website is lightonconspiracies.com. I will be performing at the Verve in Somerville Friday, two shows, 7:30 and 9:30. There might be one or two tickets left. It's mostly sold out. This has been episode 245 of Highway Diary. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.